The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
You're listening to 89.5 FM, KOPN Columbia, Mid-Missouri's source for in-depth news, diverse talk, and music of the world. It's more than radio, it's community radio on the web at kopn.org. Stay tuned for Thought Crime Radio. Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies. And I'm Janelle.
And I'm Rich, and babies don't pay us to do what we do. We rely on the listeners to pay for the things that are important to them. And if you think that the free market is taking care of children and medicine and integrity and medical research all by itself, you're sadly mistaken. If you've been listening to this show for the past several months, you know that there's a huge disconnect between science and medicine in this country. And we are here, we're doing our best to try to stand up for the rights of our future citizens and citizens of the world, and keep the free market the hell out of their bodies.
Yep. We've been talking a lot about shock doctrine. That's not shock doctrine, that's shock doctrine. And a lot of our listeners here, at least locally, will be very familiar with the book Shock Doctrine by Klein. And we're taking it another step or two further in talking about the shock that happens to a woman and a baby and her partner when they're giving birth. And that shock allows the systems to really take over our lives and dictate to us because we don't really understand what's happening to us. We're numb. We can't fight back in that situation. And that never gets resolved. Our society doesn't regard the experience of labor and birth at all, as at all important, beyond the doctors have to save us and the doctors have to keep us alive and make sure we're born alive and the mother's okay and the baby's okay. Beyond that, our society is not thinking about what a human being really, really needs in the moments of birth. And home birth babies, they are amazing beings. I mean, all babies are, but the home birth babies, they aren't shocked. They aren't born in shock, which allows them to be shock allows people to be manipulated. And when we shock babies, we are creating a dynamic where we're going to be able to manipulate a human being for their whole lives. And women that give birth at home and babies that are born at home are not born shocked.
All you need to do is look at a baby's eyes to get an idea of, their experience. You shouldn't denigrate the subjective experiences of babies. This is their entire world that they're experiencing. They have no history. All they have is their innate physiological intelligence, handed down through millions of years of evolution. And they are the closest thing that we have to a...
purity.
To purity, to a divine template for what it means to be human. And when you look at a baby, in a baby's eyes at birth,
Don't do that because nobody has a right. Nobody has a right to look at the baby in the eyes except the mother and the mother and the father. I have to. That's one of my things. Rich and I each have our collective.
It makes sense. I mean, it sounds kooky, but
the mother and the baby. We talk about this all the time. The mother and the baby need to make eye contact, and whoever is the first to take that baby and handle and touch and look in that baby's eyes.
That is an imprint.
It's an imprint, just like we know from Lorenzo's work, the ducks that imprinted with him. Babies do the same thing, and so don't look in babies' eyes. In fact, this is one of my tangents. Like, when you're around a person with a baby, you don't need to hold the baby. It's not your baby. The only thing a baby needs is to be in the mother's arms. Mothers need to be able to say, no, I don't want you, stranger, in my baby's face.
It shouldn't be even necessary for a mother, with all the things going on in her life at that moment, to be having to defend herself from the onslaught of strangers.
Well, you know what happens is that, like you were saying, you were talking about the baby when the baby comes in. The baby is pure. The baby is just coming from spirit world, whatever your religious beliefs are or aren't. The fact is like there's this being coming in that, we're a live being and we die, that we come and go from somewhere. But here's this baby that's just coming in and is just such pureness. I think people want to glom onto that. They want to get some of that for themselves. Because by the time you get to be our age, we're pretty layered with all of our stuff from our own births, our own life of experiences. So people gravitate to babies like light. They're like light, and people gravitate to them. And I think rather than trying to get the baby to smile at you and get the baby's attention, just acknowledge the baby and the mother and let them be.
Support the mother and baby together, bonding together. That's what the baby needs. That's what the mother needs.
Don't do anything that's going to disrupt that.
Yeah.
Even if it's you going, oh, do, 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 do. How old are you? The baby doesn't want to hear that.
Right. But back to the idea of shock doctoring. It's very interesting when you look at the dynamics of how this apparently happened over many decades. We have a medical system, an intergenerational pattern of behavior in the medical system, which seems to both create and profit from crises in the obstetrical wards. And I'm not saying that this is a conscious thing. It just seems as though it's come on naturally that medical practices which tend to generate more money are the ones that are selected for over a long period of time. And now what we have is a medical system which prevents or inhibits the establishment of breastfeeding in the new mother, robs the baby of umbilical cord blood up to one half of the volume of the baby's blood is sometimes clamped into the placenta before it's allowed to drain into the fetus after birth. I mean, into the newborn after birth. And you know, in an adult, this would be seen as a major life-threatening, you know, hemorrhage. But this is standard practice in American obstetrical wards to clamp the umbilical cord as soon as the baby comes out. And they've known for hundreds of years that this is a bad idea. And somehow this lesson is not taught in medical schools.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of money, we need to talk to our listeners about our pledge week going on up here at KOPN. KOPN is a community-led community radio that relies on donations from our listeners to stay here and stay running.
Yeah, if you think you could hear a show like this on a commercial radio station, I don't know what world you're living in, but you know, advertisers tend to be vested interests with wide-ranging financial connections.
We don't have any commercials.
We have public announcements, but you know, we don't.
We don't promote anyone.
Yeah. So basically,
we promote free speech.
We, you know, this society has a huge Bermuda Triangle in the middle of it, and what falls into that Bermuda Triangle and is never seen again are those issues which are of importance to the citizens, but which have no economic, you know, they're not economically viable in this economy, and. So this is why we have this is why we're descending into barbarism. You know, this society is descending into a state of barbarism. It already is, largely.
And your donation to KOPN can help keep us from continuing down that path.
That's right.
So we have people out in the green room who are taking calls. If you want to call in and donate to KOPN to help us stay on the air. I'm not sure what the numbers are. 874-5676?
Or 1-800-895-5676.
That's if you're in Missouri, but outside of the 573 area code.
Right. So this station functions and has functioned for many years on a shoestring budget, largely kept afloat by the dedication of volunteers who come and go, some of whom have stayed for long periods of time.
The station is 35 years old, and there are people here who have been here for the whole 35 years.
Yes.
And it's an open door. Anybody in the community can come up here, and your help is needed.
And if you have an issue that you want to rant and rave about, you know.
I mean, they put me and Rich on the air.
Isn't that amazing?
That's free speech for you, baby.
Yeah, that's taken it to an extreme, I think.
So if you're listening, and we know that we have listeners from Sweden and Australia and South Africa and all over Canada, you can still call and donate and let us know that, let our community and our board and our station know that we have listeners all over the world listening to Thought Crime Radio, because you're also a voice for the human rights of babies and that the show is important to you.
And you have to coexist with the products of these procedures that we're talking about on this show. You have to coexist with these people in the world, so it might be a strategic action for you to try to ameliorate the worst of American medical culture.
Are you saying this is one thing that they can do?
I think this is one thing they can do for their own self-protection. I would suggest thinking about it.
For their protection, so that they don't have to live in a society where babies have been harmed, and
they don't have to coexist with a society that has military bases all over the world and feels free to launch wars at wars of aggression at will.
We think that the way people are born
has a lot to do with that.
Yeah,
because people imprint just like animals, and if you set up a baby or child for a lifetime of unhappiness, you know, that creates vibrations and waves that permeate the entire society.
So yeah, if you'd like to donate to KOPN to make sure that our station is here so that we're on the air and all the other wonderful programs of talk and music 24 hours a day, you can call 573-874-5676 or 1-800-895-5676 if you're outside of the 573 area code but within Missouri. Everyone else has to call a 573. Or you can pay securely on our website at www.kopn.org.
Yes, we're a global enterprise, aren't we?
We are. I mean, we know that we have listeners from all over the world. Listen, we have a Grateful Dead show on Saturday night that has viewers or listeners from all over the world.
Yeah.
Where can you listen to Grateful Dead on Saturday night for hours?
This station is a precious jewel in this community and in this state and really, you know, now in this world. And we need to talk about permaculture. If we want to talk about a sustainable society, we need to talk about nurturing the things that are important to us. And this station, I think, is very important.
We have a show on Wednesday nights called Film Earth. Farm and Fiddle.
Farm and Fiddle, yeah.
I just have film and blazed in my head. Farm and Fiddle, which is a show about sustainability. We have a women's issues show, all kinds of talk shows, local talk shows, music shows, all the music from around the world. So if you want to support that, whether you're here in town or across the world, the phone number is 573-874-5676. I don't think I've heard the phone ring.
Can you hear it in here?
Shh. Yeah, you're funny.
Where are you?
Well, there's a saying that new action brings new strength. That's what you were talking about. So the action today of calling to support KOPN and our show is going to help us to continue to spread this message of, well, gloom and hope, because it's sort of the bad news when we talk about what's been going on in our society to children and babies for decades now. But the good news is
that we know what to do.
We know what to do to change it. And not only that, we know how to heal it after it's happened to us. We don't have to ignore it and say, oh, that didn't happen to me, and then end up recapitulating that or re-traumatizing other people.
Yeah, if you think medical science is going to take care of this on its own, you know, in some sense, medical and science, you know, the two words are an oxymoron together, because some of the stuff they've known about since, certainly the cord clamping issue has been known for over 100 years, and yet it's somehow been lost. It's just unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable.
And here we are talking about it in Columbia, Missouri.
There is a wide...
Letting people know.
Yeah, yeah.
That this has happened and we can do better. We can do better by our children.
We can't rely on the system to take care of it. It has failed miserably.
No, and I'm gonna call and get our guest on today here shortly. And this is his area. Our guest today is Dr. Meir Eisenstein, and he's an MD... a lawyer, and he has a master's of public health. And he's the medical director for Home First Health Services in Chicago, which is, I don't know, I think 20 years, for 20 years they've been doing home birth in Chicago, and he has teams of doctors and nurses and midwives who go to the home. They have equipment that they need with them.
And they have a large population of now home-birthed babies that they can track over years,
yeah,
their development.
Yeah, very large. Yeah. And he's also the assistant medical director of the Alternative Medicine Integration. And maybe some of our listeners know of him because he's actually become very well-known. And I know I get his newsletter, and you can sign up for it. He's
HomeFirst.com?
HomeFirst.com, but he is also very involved in all the current issues like the H1N1, the vitamin D, immunizations, hormonal replacement, weight loss, all from an alternative medicine perspective. So he's really up on all that. And, wow, I mean, I think what we're going to talk with him about really is the vaccine issue, which is near and dear to your heart. One of your main concerns.
Well, there's just scandal piled upon scandal regarding the swine flu issue. Let's see, in June 2009, the WHO declared the swine flu a Class 6 pandemic, despite evidence that it did not fulfill the required conditions of a pandemic, which are that it causes serious illness, spreads easily and sustainably among humans. Most of the cases attributed to the swine flu proved to be mild, and far fewer than anticipated cases emerged. Interestingly, both the WHO and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control stopped counting swine flu cases and started attributing all serious respiratory illnesses to swine flu. The CDC actually told the states in the United States to stop gathering data on the swine flu last summer. So CBS reporter Cheryl Atkinson actually did something almost unheard of in journalism these days. She investigated. Atkinson's investigation revealed a very different picture from the CDC's fear-mongering about swine flu. She was interviewed on the Mercola.com website in November. According to Atkinson, according to the tests done by the states prior to the CDC's directive, the vast majority of the presumed swine flu cases weren't flu at all. They weren't swine flu or regular flu. They were some other sort of upper respiratory infection. In Florida, for instance, 83% of the specimens that were presumed to be swine flu were negative for all flu when they were tested. In California, 86% of suspected H1N1 specimens were not swine flu or any flu. Only 2% were confirmed swine flu. In Alaska, 93% of suspected swine flu specimens were negative for all flu types. Only 1% was H1N1. Furthermore, the CDC stonewalled Atkinson's repeated requests for what should have been public information regarding the so-called epidemic, forcing her to rely on an FOIA request. According to Atkinson, the CDC denied her request for expedited FOIA processing because, quote, this is not a matter of widespread and exceptional media or public interest. Go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Oh, good, because I have Dr. Eisenstein on the line with us. Hello, Dr. Eisenstein.
Hello, how are you?
We're great, thank you. We are so happy to have you on.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much. My pleasure.
I already introduced you before I called you, so we just want to get right into this with you. I was telling our listeners that you started the Home First Birth program, I don't know how long ago, but you still have home birth going on in Chicago, and that you were very, very up on all the vitamin D, H1N1, vaccines, metabolic and weight loss, and all the integrative sorts of medicine. But we really want to focus, I think, today on some of the chemicals that are used in birth and the immunizations.
Fine. You know, let me tell you something. Thank you very much for that introduction. You know, that's I'm not sure I'm an expert at everything, but I do a lot of talking. go ahead. Let me say, it all puts itself together. I can tell you what's so fascinating with vitamin D. We thought our practice, which has the healthiest women in the world, you know, the women who come to us all nurse their children. They have their babies at home. They don't vaccinate their children. We thought the vitamin D levels would be good until we realized that pregnant women just aren't taking enough vitamin D. I mean, this is a couple of years ago we already realized this. And we ran a little study in our practice. We found that the average number in our practice was low 20s, you know. And if nothing else, everyone can get something from this. If you're pregnant or nursing, I don't believe in blood tests for the most part. They're mostly pretty much a waste of time. But I absolutely believe it's critical now to get vitamin D levels, because there's been, just like the vaccines have been the biggest nonsense perpetuated on us by the American Academy of Pharmaceuticals, or better known as the American Academy of Pediatrics, you know, that the sun causes skin cancer. Well, you know, that's a theory. It's kind of like the theory like global warming. All you have to do is go outside in Washington, D.C., and you question the whole theory. And I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm not taking a position on that. But the dermatologists for 35 years have told us that the sun causes skin cancer. And because of that, no one's been in the sun, you know, for the last 35 years. The levels, the whole country, and it's been documented everywhere in New England Journal of Medicine, British Medical Journal, Journal of the American Medical Association, that the vitamin D levels in this country are dreadfully low, approaching that of rickets. And
yes, it seems rickets is the benchmark that they use to determine the proper vitamin D dosage. But we know that vitamin D is involved in hundreds of different metabolic processes.
Oh, you're right on point. That's right. You're right on point. But we are approaching rickets, and they thought that that was the benchmark. You know, in fact, we're seeing rickets already in this country again, which I never thought anyone would see. But what's happened is, I got to just tell you something for our listeners to listen and hear if the sun causes cancer, skin cancer, and we could pretty much agree that people are in the sun a whole lot less today than 35 years ago, why is there so much more skin cancer today than 35 years ago? Skin cancer rates have almost doubled in the last 35 years. Now, it could be the sunscreens, which have toxic chemicals. I mean, that's a possibility, you know. But it surely doesn't seem to be the sun, you know. And I know many of your listeners know it doesn't take very much sun, 5 or 10 minutes on a nice sunny day, midday sun with 75% body exposure, to get 5 or 10,000, depending on the skin color.
Right. The RDA is 400, and just a few minutes in the sun, your body generates, you know, 10 times that amount at least.
Yeah, a Caucasian lifeguard will get 50,000 a day. Asian or Hispanic lifeguard, depending on the shade of their skin, will get 25,000 or 30,000 a day, even more, maybe 40,000 a day. And an African American will get about 15,000 or 20,000 a day by being in the sun as a lifeguard. Obviously, a protective mechanism, and not to get burned. Because, but anyway, so pregnant women are going to need at least 10,000 a day. That's been shown, and boy, it makes a difference.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry. I wanted to ask you this question about when 35 years ago, before people were using sunscreen, before somebody told us and advertised it that we could get cancer from the sun, did we have the vitamin D issue?
Good question. Boy, that's a good question. Well, we know that, just like you said, cancer rates have gone up, diabetes rates have gone up, chronic illness has gone up, all which is partially linked to vitamin D insufficiency. And so this is a tough one to know, except that we know that that all these factors have gone up and vitamin D levels have gone down. So, you know, always hard to make a correlation, you know, but it seems fairly obvious that there is some type of correlation here.
I think there is.
It stands to reason that, you know, our species evolved in the sunlight near the equator. We're hairless apes. You know, we have no business being up here at the northern latitudes. But
I tell my wife that all the time. So she said for 50 cents a day, you'll take some vitamin D.
Yeah. So, you know, the fact that the body manufactures this massive quantity of vitamin D on just a relatively minor dose of sunlight is an indication of how important the body considers this to be. And
exactly.
You know,
I can tell you some of the latest research, which is so fascinating. I was up in Canada at a conference in Toronto, and Dr. Reinhold Weiss was really one of the world experts in vitamin D. I had issues with him on vaccines, so I got into a big fight over that. I said, how could you believe that there's a conspiracy in vitamin D and you have no problem with vaccines? Some of them didn't make sense, but leave that aside. What he said was that we finally kind of figure out what vitamin D is. That we're talking about the 25-hydroxy-D, and that's what the vitamin D3 is, the cholecalciferol. It's not a hormone. It's not even a pre-hormone. What it is it's a substrate that's used for the body in order to build vitamin D. Now, I tell you why that's important, because he said, you can put all the substrate you want in the body. It has to go through the liver, through the kidney, to become the active actual hormone. You can't, if you have too much hormone, you have problems. But the body only uses what it needs. So you can have high levels floating in the blood, unless it needs it, it won't allow it through the pathway in order to convert to vitamin, to the actual hormone itself. But if you don't have enough, now you get into a insufficiency problem, and that's where you start having problems in all the systems that vitamin D generates.
So
it's essentially the argument why you can't overdose on vitamin D. You virtually can't overdose.
So you're saying that what they sell in the grocery store is the precursor to vitamin D, not the actual.
Right, that's right. You know, and when anyone who sells cholecalciferol, vitamin D3, it's the substrate. It's like the bricks. It's not the house. It's got to go through a transformation of building it in order to become the house itself. You know,
so the body has to build it. The body has to use that brick to build it.
The body has. That's right. That's right. And it's not a vitamin. You know, the definition of a vitamin, like vitamin C, is something that you take in a form but doesn't change to be used in the form that you take in. So if you take vitamin C, the body doesn't change it, just uses the vitamin C. You know, vitamin A, the same thing. It'll use the vitamin A. Vitamin D is not a vitamin. The only reason it's called D is because it was discovered after C. And this whole misnomer that it's a fat-soluble vitamin is totally a misnomer. That's how people start believing, or doctors, that you can overdose. Because you can definitely overdose with vitamin A and vitamin E, but you can essentially cannot overdose on vitamin D.
That's amazing. That is a huge lie.
That's why I wanted to talk to you, because you're one of the sources that I trust to tell us what's going on.
That's very sweet. Thank you. And, you know, my wife has always said, I'm not the brightest guy, but I'm fairly good at hearing the truth as such, you know. And when Dr. Reinhold Weiss said that, it was so interesting. He said there's never been a case of essentially vitamin D toxicity, except they know of two cases, and their vitamin D levels, the 25 hydroxy, were over 300. I mean, now, how did that happen? Someone bought some vitamin D over the internet. Vitamin D is an extremely small molecule, extremely small. 50,000 units and is 1.2 milligrams. Like, the idea how little 1.2 milligrams is let's say antibiotics. You give children 125 milligrams three times a day. So here it's all about 1.2 milligrams is 50,000 units. And so it takes up, it's a speck, like, you know. And what happened was when they produced it, they thought they were putting 1,000 units, but it actually was 1 million units. So this person was taking 2 million units a day for 3 months. And his level got up to about 400 or 500. And he started feeling a little bit dizzy. And his doctor measured his level, and it was like 400 or 500, you know. They kept him out.
I was just wondering. I mean, this is a blatant illustration of the corruption of the medical establishment here. That I mean, how do you account for this gross misrepresentation of the science?
Well, because it
money
vitamin D. Yeah. I think so, because vitamin. I can tell you in our practice, our little practice here, I got three incredibly wonderful partners. My partner says, Mayor, you've replaced a few dollars of vitamin D for 200 office visits a month. People aren't getting sick as much, which they were teasing, obviously, mm-hmm. because, you know, we had families of four or five children that always had two or three kids sick during the winter. Not a lot, you know, they have quite a healthy population. It almost completely disappeared. You know, I mean, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. You know,
so for every international unit of vitamin D withheld from the population, this generates probably millions of dollars of income for the vested interests.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, antibiotics, you know,
cancer.
All the whole gamut of pharmaceuticals, and what I like so much about vitamin D is its ultimate source is totally natural, you know, just going in the sun. So, you know, we're talking about something that doesn't require any type of supplement. We're only deficient because we don't get enough sun exposure. As you said, we were hairless, dark-colored, people living by the equator, and somehow we thought it would be nice to travel back, up and down the equator, and that's when we started having our problems.
So people attribute the increase in respiratory illnesses during the wintertime to a reduction of sunlight exposure. Is that correct?
I mean, without a doubt. I mean, I think that's, you know, I've always said, you don't call it I'm not getting a hot, you're getting a cold. and you're not cold when you get a cold. But I think it goes along with, you know, when you're sick, you say, oh, I got a cold. You don't say you have a hot, which makes more sense because you're not cold, you're usually hot. I mean, without a doubt, respiratory illnesses are more common in the winter than they are in the summer.
Because people are bundling up in coats and they're not going out as much. And the sun is lower on the horizon.
And that's right. And exactly right. You know, and there's a very good way to know if you're making any vitamin D, because it's called shadow deficiency. If your shadow is taller than your body height, the sun is at an angle that you're not making vitamin D. Even if you look in the summer, you'll see that your shadow is a fraction of the size of your height. And my grandkids all know this real well, so they always look at their shadows now when they go outside. And even like, we were in Florida a few weeks ago with two of my grandkids, and they said, "Look, Papa, we're not making any vitamin D, even though here we are in Florida, And so you're making less. I was always making some.
Right. So the threshold is you say about 45 degrees off of vertical. Is when you have to start worrying.
And the bottom line is this is where technology is good, because it's a simple blood test. You get the 25 hydroxy D test. Just make sure your number is over 50 or 60, if you check any population, rickets is under 20. The American population is somewhere in the low 20s, the average person. I mean, it's really low. And that's what I'm saying. It's bordering rickets. And there's enough circumstantial evidence that many of these chronic illnesses are increased because of this. Interesting, people from Latin America and South America who come to the Midwest, the next generation has doubled the cancer rate of their grandparents.
Even if they're moved from a similar latitude from the South?
Okay, let's say if you're a second generation Midwest from Latin America, your cancer rate will be double that of your grandparents. So let's say your parents came to Chicago. Mm-hmm. They have children in Chicago. They've never been really in Latin America or South America. The cancer rate in the children will be double that of the grandparents, because the parents essentially spent a part of their life growing up in a warmer climate.
Also, the parents were not born in this country.
That's right. The parents born in the country are red. Yeah. Well, born and living in, that means they don't have sun exposure. I mean, it's interesting. They look at breast cancer rates, and they try to disprove this by showing that in southern Florida, mainly in the Miami area, the breast cancer rates were as high as anywhere in the country, until someone looked very carefully and said the people there lived in the north almost all their life and came to the south later in life.
So, can we look at the vaccines too? You were talking.
I'm all yours.
You were talking about in your practice, because they're mostly home birth babies and breastfed babies, that the illnesses are less and the vaccines are less. Vaccines.
I'll give you a history of our practice.
Okay.
I've been very blessed because Dr. Robert Mendelson was my mentor in medical school, and that goes back almost 40 years ago. In fact, it was about 40 years ago that I met him, and he was the former national medical director of Head Start. And I can tell I was a third-year medical student when I met him. My wife was pregnant with our first baby, and the only reason I took his class was not because I knew who he was. Was because I heard you didn't have to show up and you could pass. And I kind of was losing my interest in medicine. I just didn't find anything I really liked. And as my wife said, the day I met him was the last day I lost interest, because he was one of the most incredible people in the world. Outside of the fact that he was a brilliant doctor, he was also just an incredibly lovely person. And he started questioning vaccines back in 1971. In 71, he believed that DPT and oral polio should be given. So my older boy got DPT and oral polio. He didn't believe any of the other vaccines, nor are there many. There was measles, mumps, rubella at the time. They were just phasing out the smallpox at the time. And by 73, he'd given up on all vaccines. So my last five children and all 10 of my grandchildren had never received any vaccines. And I didn't really make a big deal when I went into practice in 73. You know, it wasn't, my issue was I wanted to help women have babies at home. Our first baby was born in the hospital. It was a nightmarish experience. Although by today's standards, it wasn't that bad. It was a vaginal birth. You know, like today, it would have been a guaranteed cesarean section. And then, and my wife said she didn't want to have any more babies in the hospital. In fact, she said she may didn't want to have any more children at all. And she said, why don't you take a look, ask Dr. Mendelsohn, he knows some of those living babies at home. And so I introduced me to Dr. Gregory White, who had been living babies at home for about 25 years. This is back in the early 70s. And I started working with him, and I said, oh, my God, this is just spectacular. My dad was alive then, and I said, Dad, I don't think I'm going to do this the rest of my life. But he said, you know, you have a small family. You don't need a lot of money. As long as you're enjoying yourself. Well, here I am almost 40 years later, still enjoying myself. Have expanded to other things, but, you know, I think still the cornerstone of our practice is still home birth, even though, sad to say, the interest in home birth and breastfeeding is absolutely dying in the country. You know, it's really kind of a strange phenomena. You know, I really thought back in the early 70s that home birth would just be a respectable minority, 10 or 15% of the population. Right now, it's less than 0.1% of the whole country of women are having babies at home, and the incidence of breastfeeding is barely any higher. You know, the reason I know that is not that I have my hand in all the data, but the amount of formula sold in this country is enough to feed every baby in this country for 2 years. So unless people are hoarding infant formula, you know, we've got a problem that no one's nursing. And you can see the skyrocketing asthma, allergy, ADD, ADHD as home birth goes down, which means women are being drugged in childbirth. Breastfeeding goes down, so they're giving toxins to newborns. And the vaccine rate just keeps going up, you know. It became so blatantly obvious as time went on about the vaccines, but it still wasn't a major. We offered people choice. And we had thousands of people back in the early 70s who didn't vaccinate their children, but there were lots who did. But as time has gone on and I've become more open about it, right now less than 2% of the families in our practice give any vaccines. And the vast majority don't. And I argued with my partners endlessly that we should just cut out the vaccine program altogether. And their argument to me was that we've most probably helped thousands of people who decided not to vaccinate after they came to us. And by eliminating, we're going to eliminate those people from coming to us because they'll feel that we're too far out. You know, I don't exceptionally buy the argument, but, you know, it's fairly compelling in a sense. So, not only forces vaccines on anyone in our practice, we in a sense try to openly discourage it, you know. And we're almost there in a sense, you know. There's very few people with vaccines anymore.
So what can you tell us is the reason for that? Why should we not vaccinate?
Well, Dr. Mendelsohn in 1973 made the statement, and it was good enough for me because he was picked by President Lyndon Johnson to be the National Medical Director for Head Start. And they aren't going to pick anyone but the most brilliant doctor in the country. And he said every vaccine causes neurological damage. Every vaccine causes neurological damage. I mean, that was the statement he made in 73. Well, that really resonated with my wife, and she's the brains of the family. And Karen said, you know, if that's what he believes, that's got to be. And she's the one who's been pushing for no one to be vaccinated in our practice, and someone doesn't want to go somewhere else. And
what is the mechanism for this neurological damage aside from the
Well, he didn't elaborate on that, except that was his feeling. Because remember, he's now the National Medical Director of Head Start. He's got millions of children essentially under his care, and he's watching what's happening to these millions of children, and he's watching ADD, ADHD. Autism wasn't even on the radar in 73. You know, it was still 1 in 10,000. You know, it's only been the last 15 or 16 years that autism rates have risen out of control. And you can almost directly look at the number of vaccines given to children and the autism rate, be it the mercury, the aluminum, be it the MMR, be it the viruses, the tagalong viruses, all the other ingredients.
Yeah, the tagalong viruses, this is a huge issue that most people are unaware of. You know, vaccines are not pure substances by any stretch of the imagination, biologically
pure. You're 100% right. You're 100% right. SV40 stands for simian virus number 40, and it was a contaminant found in the original Salk vaccine. And some of the, because the original Salk vaccine was grown on the kidney of the African green monkey. And we believed in the early 70s, go back a little bit earlier, maybe 60s, that there was no such thing as transmission of viruses from animals to humans.
And yet they were using animals to cultivate human viruses. This seems counterintuitive.
Exactly. And I was taught that in medical school. There's no such thing. Animal viruses don't affect humans. A whole field developed called zoonosis, which showed that it's absolutely not true. And then they found this SV40 virus, which was found in the Salk vaccine, Salk polio vaccine. And what made it, what was unique about it is, it was the first virus they found that caused cancer in humans. It was a monkey virus, a simian virus. And I assumed, in my naivete, that they picked the number 40 just randomly, maybe for someone's birthday or something like that, and birth year. You know, it turned out that was the 40th virus they isolated in the polio vaccine.
And millions of people have gotten this vaccine.
Exactly.
So the question is, how much of this epidemic of cancer we're experiencing is due to just this one vaccine?
You're right on point. I mean, and let me tell you how scary it is. They've now found SV40 virus in children who never even received the Salk vaccine,
So it's being genetically transmitted.
Genetically transferred. Now, I've always said that, you know, and I can tell you what one of the causes of it. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, 50% of the people who have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma get it from SV40 virus. That's accepted. You know, it's not Mayor Einstein making it up. And there's something like 15 or 20,000 deaths a year from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, you know, which means more than half of those deaths are most probably caused by SV40 virus. This is so scary. So let's assume a false assumption that polio vaccine got rid of polio. Let's make that assumption. It's a bad assumption. It's not true. I mean, there's enough evidence for that. But let's take the best case scenario. So now you're trading one illness for which was relatively mild and didn't really. It just they did great campaigning to talk about the iron lungs and that. There were only, I think, at the height of the polio epidemic, something 10 or 15,000 cases of polio in this country. You know, but the feeling was, out of the 40, 50 million children, everyone is going to come down with polio. I mean, that was the, this is clearly the, it did a great marketing campaign. It's very similar to the swine flu vaccine campaign. Except I think the public didn't buy it this time. I think that's the difference, you know, which I find interesting. And I'm shocked that the public rejected the swine flu vaccine.
Isn't that amazing? You know, well, some of the information about the huge amount of corruption in the CDC and the WHO, the World Health Organization, is coming to light now, that all of these advisors that served on their advisory panels had conflicts of interest and, you know, holdings in pharmaceutical companies that were manufacturing vaccines.
Oh, that's and let me tell you what's interesting. I'm one of the few people who believe that this most probably laboratory-generated vaccine is going to be a problem. It may take another year or two or 3 years, but even worse, the people who have the biggest problem are those who are vaccinated. Because even assuming the best-case scenario that the vaccines work, it's going to only work against the milder strains. All they're doing is, essentially, someone said it very well, a scientist said, that we're telling the terrorist, the virus, what our plan is to just bypass our defenses.
So we're selecting out the mildest strain and making room for more virulent.
Right, and that's what happens. You know, with new viruses or enter into a population, they'll keep mutating until they find this a strain that can actually kill people. You know, and this is very scary stuff. You know, but the answer is not the vaccine. In fact, we already know that the people who got the seasonal flu vaccine were more likely to have problems with swine flu itself, you know. I mean, the real corruption comes where the Obama administration, and I have written endlessly, but they don't care. I mean, that's not. I said, Mr. President, you and your wife, your children are African Americans. You have dark skin. Have you ever had a vitamin D test? You know, why is there not one word mentioning of the billions of dollars you've spent on this all nonsense by swine flu that people have to have higher vitamin D levels to be somewhat, maybe totally protective against swine flu?
And we haven't even begun to address the thimerosal issue, a huge cover-up underway with that.
Oh, no doubt about that. You know, I mean, and that's, you know, you can believe one of two things, that there's naivete among the drug companies. They don't know that thimerosal is a toxic chemical. You can believe that. Or you can believe that this is the greatest marketing campaign to inject toxins into our children and adults in the flu vaccine. And get away with it. This is incredible.
Did you hear about this research that was done in 2004 and 2005 that found the definitive link connecting thimerosal to autism? Children with a specific mitochondrial genotype.
Oh, right. You know, I mean, one of the reasons why Dr. Andy Wakefield, who I think is one of the most brilliant scientists around, got into trouble. In a sense, is because the argument has to be more. Dr. Mendelsohn made the right argument. There's no other argument. Vaccines cause neurological damage. The minute you try to nail it down very tight, they try to box you into a corner. It's an absolute legal maneuver, you know. But you know, and then they try to show that what you're saying is wrong. Therefore, there's absolutely no link whatsoever. It doesn't exist, you know. I'm ashamed of doctors. That's what I'm ashamed of.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm ashamed of doctors who should know better. You know, unfortunately, you have to understand the mindset of a doctor. They're the best in their grammar school. They're the top in their high school. They're the top in their college. If it said that it's 80 degrees and sunny outside, that's what the professor said, and it's raining and thunderstorming. You put that on the exam, 80 degrees and sunny, you got the right answer, you got it right. So after a while, you forget how to think. You literally, you can pass any test. You can regurgitate any material, but you've lost your ability to really analyze what's going on. How could any doctor inject mercury into anyone?
Yeah, the key to understanding the discrepancies between these different studies trying to connect thimerosal with autism is that the naive studies don't control for the presence of this specific genetic trait that vulnerable kids have.
Right, well said.
Which could explain why some get it and some don't.
Right, it's like you could drive your car on a flat road. And not, you can make a little bit of errors, but back and forth, nothing happens. But what's if you're on a mountain top and the road has 3 inches of variation, and now all of a sudden you move 4 inches and you fall off the top of the side of the mountain, and that's the child that has the genetic variation. I agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this misinformation has still not been corrected. It's not only hasn't been corrected; it's getting new life with this recent retraction. I think in the Lancet, was it?
Yeah, right, Lancet. And I mean, how shameful Lancet. Well, Lancet to me is just a ragtag paper. It's not a scientific journal.
But the thing to know about that is they retracted that study on the basis of the methodology of the research. They claimed it was unethical how they gathered the data.
Right.
They didn't even address the issue of whether the data was valid or not.
Well said. But here, did they retract their studies on Vioxx being safe? Baxter being safe? Did they retract the studies that were done by doctors who were paid by pharmaceutical companies where there were ghostwriters who wrote the articles? No, not one of those studies have ever been retracted.
And the cholesterol studies?
The cholesterol studies, exactly. You know, the one in Zedia and all the... Vytorin, even more Vytorin, you know, that's the, have they retracted any of the stuff on the dangers of Tylenol or aspirin, you know, all Dr. Wakefield showed in 1998, he had 12 children, you're right, you said it real well, and he said there may be some type of correlation here. That was the extent of it. It wasn't a major study, you know, it just was the, it's kind of like, in law, the definition of a conflict of interest means that What you're saying, so if someone owns a pharmaceutical company and they're put on the board to decide if pharmaceuticals should be given to people, that's a conflict. But it doesn't mean that the pharmaceuticals are wrong. And that's even more blatant kind of example, you know. And you would think that minimally they should address the issue. I mean, the issue is really just kind of controlling.
It is. And you know, Dr. Eisenstein, we are running out of time already.
Let me tell you, it's been such a pleasure. We just scratched the surface.
Yes, I wish we had more time, for sure.
Yeah, and we were a little shorter than usual, but we'd like to have you back. But we have a couple.
I'd be honored. I'd be absolutely honored.
And we'd like to talk more about birth and some of the bigger picture stuff. But if you have something that you'd like to close us out with in the last couple of minutes, anything that you really want our audience to know about, especially the vitamin D and the autism and the immunizations.
I wrap it up real quickly. Have your baby at home. Nurse your baby for at least 2 years. Stay away from allopathic doctors. Go to homeopaths, naturopaths, chiropractors. And use only allopathic doctors for serious medical problems. Don't vaccinate your children. Stay away from any pharmaceuticals wherever you can. Find natural alternatives. And of course, take vitamin D.
do you think that we need to use sunscreen? Because I never bought that. I never bought.
No. But I say to someone, in the summer, if you're worried about it, stay in the sun for 10 or 15 minutes. Like my mom lives in Miami. She's in her 80s. She is incredible. She's a real role model. She swims 3 times a week. She walks 5 miles every day. And her vitamin D levels were low because she had sunscreen on. I said, Ma, keep the sunscreen off, for a minimum of half hour every day. And then if you want to put it on, you got to put some without the chemicals. He said, if there's any names in there you can't recognize, don't buy it.
That's right. That's what I thought. I love it when I get to ask you that because I've thought about this for a long, long time. But before we go, I want to have you tell us about your web address, and I know you have a newsletter because I get it, and how people can get your newsletter.
Eisenstein. It's homefirst.com, HOMEFIRST.com, and there's a little link in the top right-hand corner of the where you could sign up for the newsletter. All you have to do is put your email address and your name, and I send it out about 3 or 4 times a week, and I try to keep it simple like everything else. I try to find one thing to talk about every day, and let me tell you, it's been a great pleasure being on with you.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Mayor Eisenstein from Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you.
HomeFirst.com. You're listening to 89.5 FM KOPN Columbia, and this is Janelle for Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies. We look forward to being with you next week.
Donate to your local baby cause.